Why? Why do young soldiers go to war? You can hear why in this ballad composed in Chester County, Pennsylvania, around 1755, while these soldiers were marching off to battle in the French and Indian War. To arms, my jolly grenadiers. Hark how the drums do roll it along. To horse, with valiant good cheer. We'll meet our proud foe before it is long. Let not your courage fail you. Be valiant, stout, and bold. It will soon avail you, my loyal hearts of gold. Huzzah, my valiant countrymen. Again I say huzzah. 'Tis nobly done. The day's our own. Huzzah, huzzah. March on, march on. Brave Braddock leads the foremost. The battle is begun, as you may fairly see. Stand firm, be bold, and it will soon be over. We'll soon gain the field from our proud enemy. A squadron now appears, my boys. If that they do, but stand, boys, never fear. Be sure you mind the word of our command. Huzzah, my valiant countrymen, again I say huzzah. 'Tis nobly done, the day's our own. Huzzah, huzzah. See how they break and fly before us. See how they are scattered all over the plain. Now, our country will adore us in peace and in triumph, boys, when we return again. Then laurels shall our glory crown for all our actions told. The hills shall echo all around, my loyal hearts of gold. The archetype of the warrior inspires youth in every culture. These brave ones put their lives on the line to defend the nation, family, and soil from invasion and desecration. Sequenced into our DNA is the urge to protect and defend not just ourselves, but the ones we love. Yet I doubt I need convince anyone here today the reality of war is quite different than the brawny music soldiers sing to bolster their courage. Robert E. Lee wrote these words to his wife in 1864. What a cruel thing is war to separate and destroy families and friends and mar the purest joys and happiness God has granted us in this world. To fill our hearts with hatred instead of love for our neighbors, and to devastate the fair face of this beautiful world. Said President Eisenhower in 1953, every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of our laborers, the genius of its scientists, and the hopes of its children. This is not a way of life at all in any true sense. Under the clouds of war, it is humanity hanging on a cross of iron. Soldiers today are returning home more often in tatters than in glory. They return not only with visible wounds, but also with invisible wounds. We are just discovering, for example, how damaging exposure to explosive shock waves are to brain tissue. Those shock waves travel right through the skull, knocking the brain back like a punch to the jaw. A flak jacket and helmet may stop shrapnel, but shock waves go right through it, doing unseen damage called traumatic brain injury, or TBI. What we hear most about, however, today is post-traumatic stress symptoms that disrupt veterans' lives. Those symptoms are factors in breaking up their relationships and marriages, stimulating substance abuse to self-medicate, the inability to hold a job, homelessness, and suicide, inability to sleep, restless weariness, hypersensitivity and reactivity, emotional numbness, inability to concentrate, and fits of rage are just a few of the cognitive disruptions vets experience. The Washington Post reports more than half of the 2.6 million people who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan have returned home with at least one of those problems. This is a big deal. While it has newer names like PTSD and TBI today, veterans have been returning home from war with invisible problems for many, many years. This damage has been known in the past by names such as war neurosis in the mid-20th century, battle fatigue in World War I, shell shock in World War II, World War I was shell shock, soldier's heart, DaCosta's syndrome, irritable heart, the effort syndrome from the time of the Civil War to World War I. The Swiss have called it nostalgia. The Germans have called it Haiva, homesickness, estar roto, to be broken, maladie du pays. All these chronicle the damage that goes back to the time of the ancient Greeks. Dr. Tick, my source for that list, points out that the Iliad can be read as a textbook on traumatic war wounding. We can clearly see the effects of trauma in the description of Achilles' behavior. Modern warfare has components that compound the trauma. Dr. Lori Leach and Elaine Miller-Karas, co-founders and co-directors of the Trauma Resource Institute, explain, what makes it even harder for those with war-related trauma or other emotional disorders to get the help that they need is that therapists don't often understand the unique, confounding, and anomalous situation of the war zone. As in no other potentially traumatizing situation, troops are predator and prey and witness, sometimes all three at once. For example, Joan was sent into an Afghan village to ferret out the Taliban, had the job of searching Muslim women suspected of carrying explosives. Armed and ready to engage the Taliban, she was in the predator role, but she was also simultaneously frightened prey, because if one of the explosives she was looking for actually detonated, she'd die or be horribly wounded. She might also be shot from behind by a sniper. While she was herself never discovered any explosives, she did tragically become the direct witness to a traumatizing event, seeing one of her closest buddies blown up. In combat zones, however, these three roles often are experienced simultaneously with a corresponding physiological arousal. As prey, the biological impulse may be to flee. As predator, to fight, often with great ferocity and rage if a buddy has been killed, for example. And as witness, to freeze as terrible events unfold before their eyes. Since the battlefields in Iraq and Afghanistan have neither boundaries nor any predictable let-up to the violence, a soldier can be experiencing these states serially or simultaneously much of the time. Add multiple deployments with little chance to decompress in between them, and we can begin to appreciate the difficulties so many of our troops experience when they attempt to reintegrate when they come back home. And when they do come home, they are not the same person they were when they left. Just about every soldier uses violence in one way or another that they find disturbing or perhaps later regret. No soldier goes into battle to kill innocent women and children, surrendering soldiers to torture, poison, or starve people, to destroy civilian homes and properties, and to participate in the deaths of their comrades in arms through friendly fire. Yet this is the inescapable reality of war. Kill or be killed, destroy or be destroyed. And the soldiers bring all this home in their heart as a moral injury, whether or not they return home with any physical injuries. So the fact that Vietnam has very little evidence of PTSD in their population might be a little surprising. Whether North or South Vietnamese, just about all of them were involved or affected by the war. Millions died. Millions. Just about every family had someone who died or was injured during that 40-some year conflict. U.S. bombing and the use of defoliants like Agent Orange did enormous damage, yet most Vietnamese had little lasting psychological damage. One reason was the nature of the conflict. They were defending their homes and villages. This aligns much better with one's moral conscience than fighting in a foreign war for strategic advantage to stop the threat of communism. Another reason I'd like to highlight for us is the magnitude of the conflict. Every Vietnamese person, everyone, young and old, was part of the conflict, and everyone understood the harsh conditions and the horrifying effects civilians as well as the military experienced. Returning soldiers had ready sources of compassion from those who fully understood what the soldiers had experienced. How different was and is the reception of a returning soldier from Iraq and Afghanistan? Less than 1% of Americans have had any experience of Iraq or Afghanistan, let alone experience of combat. Their combat experiences were significantly different from previous wars where there was a front and there was an objective to accomplish and a finish line, an end. These soldiers were not warriors defending their own lands as much as occupiers of someone else's land. And their Western ways were not welcomed or embraced by the populations that they encountered. When I sat in a healing circle listening to a veteran of Afghanistan talk about what he experienced, it was hard for me to really be with him and empathize with him. I haven't fought in war. I don't know what it's like to take the life of another person. I haven't had to follow lethal orders that I didn't believe were valid. I haven't had to make the awesome decision of whether to shoot or whether to hold my fire. for myself or for someone else. I don't know what it is like to carry a wounded heart, a soldier's heart. I can listen, and that has value. I can learn, but I am not a warrior and never will be. For the first time in American history, during most of our lifetimes, we have moved from a civilian army to a professional army. Much of our high-tech weaponry requires a professional fighting force to operate it, maintain it, and repair it. And these professional soldiers spend a career now in service. As they do that, they move further and further away from the civilian population, becoming almost a separate, isolated, and insulated community. And a free society must guard against the divergence of the professional army's interests and that of the civilian population. We let that separation happen at our peril. Whether professional or civilian, our armed forces fight for us, the citizens of this nation. And when they kill, ultimately they kill to defend and protect us and our way of life. We have a responsibility to welcome them home and provide the care that they need to reintegrate into society rather than live their lives on the margins, as a number of them do, before suffering an early death by disease, by substance abuse, or by suicide. We must learn to offer these returning vets respect for their soldier's heart. Just as we are forever changed when a loved one dies, particularly those of us who've lost a child, so is a soldier permanently changed by the trauma of war. The soul is changed in a way witnessing the horror of man's inhumanity to man, experiencing the terror of sudden death, or in the ending of another person's life. Encountering life and death on a daily basis, not knowing whether we will see another sunset or another sunrise, exposes the harshness of reality and the cruelty of humanity in a way that is very hard to live with. Yet, that is the great nobility of the true warrior. She or he is able to look into the pit of hell, see the empty void, and the evil and innocent victimization, and choose to live. The mature warrior knows that this is one aspect of existence that cannot be removed from it. And because it cannot be removed or eliminated, at least not yet, warriors will be needed to stop it in its tracks. And that action will require the warrior to rise above this element in himself or herself. What I don't know today is how I can help in this process, or how you can help in that process. I do know that we can fully fund the Veterans Administration to tend the visible and invisible wounds of our returning and returned vets. I know that we can support Unitarian Universalist chaplains to serve in our military, as we did with Chris Antel, who was a former intern for our congregation, and he'll be speaking to us on Father's Day this year. We can advocate for the humane treatment of our service men and women, giving them adequate recovery time between deployments. When Chris was here, we started a listening circle for veterans as a way to offer emotional support. Not enough people were willing to come on a consistent basis. And I know my lack of service in the military undermines my credibility to lead such a group. Today, I stand willing to join with others in this congregation who would like to provide services to veterans of our congregation, to the veterans in our community. And while I don't know if I can be the person to do so, I have great confidence that veterans can learn to carry their wounded soldier's heart as true warriors. I hear that potential in the voice of Carl Roeder, who was an inmate in Dachau from 1933 to 1945. He wrote, "In Dachau, I made a powerful discovery. No power exists in the world that is capable of destroying humans as spiritual beings. No power exists in the world that is capable of destroying humans as spiritual beings." Let us hold that confidence, even in our unknowing of the path to its realization, as we honor the sacrifice of our veterans on this Memorial Day.